trying to navigate, like, all right, I'm a Christian, I'm a cop, right? And I'm in this church, this multi-ethnic church, and there's some people there who, like, I'm seeing on Facebook that they're just bashing police, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm like, you know, how much of this do I overlook, or, you know, stuff like that? And it finally got to a point where I reached out to one particular family that was saying all these things, and I was like, hey, when we're at church Sunday, tell my kids how big of a piece of crap you think their dad is.
Yeah.
Welcome back to another episode of Two Dudes, One God Pod. Today, Pat and I have Robert Garcia El Bombi or something. What's that?
Man, that comes from the Texas Rangers. So, really what that has to do with is, like, not having my real name on Facebook. Just, okay. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, shit. Yeah. Should we start over?
Nah, you good. You good.
Okay, it's El Bombi.
It's El Bombi.
Right.
Nah, you can have my real name.
Oh, okay. We don't know no Robert Garcia.
Dang. Just, well, in case anybody tries to look me up.
Yeah, oh, I got you. Yeah, yeah. Well, that guy, yeah, he got me. I got you. I got you. Yeah, so there's a sheriff's guy from Bossier that I think he's in North Richland Hills or something now. He moved. He kind of killed too many people in Louisiana, you know, shot a bunch of people. No joke.
Yeah.
And then he moved out there. He's like double his pay. They gave him a new Harley to ride. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just the enforcement market is, you know, you work for a rich community, you get treated rich.
Yep.
And, but his name on Facebook was like his first name, his last name, and then his first name, and they were reversed.
Like backwards? Yeah.
It was like, you know, you know, you couldn't, if you just looked at it, but if you like slow down and read it backwards, you're like, oh, that's the guy.
Yeah, a lot of people do that too.
Is that, so, they train y'all for that?
No, they don't train you for that. It's just the...
You just figure it out. You start getting DMs.
Just knowing social media. Yeah. Knowing how social media
also
works.
Also, like, you know, there's plenty of people that are out there you may very well have put in jail and
everything
like that. Yeah. And yeah. I know, what is it? You can't talk about what department you work for on social media.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I'm not trying to get sued by an agency. No. You know what I mean?
We're not pulling that, so.
Yeah.
But this guy, I think, has a story. Mm-hmm. I've never heard it from you, so I'm excited to maybe hear some things, but you have seven children?
Seven kids, yep.
Okay, because we talked about it on one episode, and I joked. I was like, I think he's got like 9 or 10 kids. I had a customer come on the lot late Saturday night, and they're like, we need an Expedition Max. And I'm like, sir, this is a Chevy dealership. I was like, would you like to see a Suburban? He's like, yeah. We open the door. They go, no, this ain't going to work. It's got bucket seats. I'm like, what's going on? They're like, we need a vehicle to fit 10 people. I said, you need an Expedition.
They hold 10?
Definitely go.
I think Expeditions hold 15.
Because that's what we need. We need something to hold 10. Right.
Well, yeah. These people's problem is they have like, you know, a family of 9.
Yeah.
And then there's always a friend that wants to come. So then there's the 10. But, well, but that would two of the 9 are surprise twins that are 4 months old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they have like teenagers, you know? Yeah. So like they're kind of in your boat.
I guess technically y'all are a family of 9.
Yeah.
And probably same situation. Somebody's friend wants to come over or something like
always.
That.
Always.
Yeah. They said every time we go somewhere, we go to Florida, we have to take 2 vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were planning to do something this summer. And, you know, Shanna, my wife, was just, she would always say, you know, let's go do this. And I'd be like, how are we going to get there? I don't mind, but how are we going to get there?
Well, I guess, when did God start showing up in your life?
Yeah, man. So, that's a good question. So, I didn't grow up in church, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't grow up, in that kind of environment. I didn't know anything about that. Like, I remember as a kid, like being in church a few times, you know, going to like a little youth group thing. I remember one time I came home, and told my mom, I was like, hey, I can't watch The Simpsons no more. And I can't listen to MC Hammer no more. Like,
It had an impact on me. I was
devastated, right?
Wait. How old are you?
I was like, I can't do this no more. I'm 41.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That checks out. I'm 40. So I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons But we did watch MC Hammer at my cousin's house.
So I was allowed. It's just the church told me I couldn't anymore. So I can't.
You know? That was the church of Simpsons.
Whatever church that was, I don't even remember. Some church in Dallas. But so I grew up, you know, I got an older brother. He's 10 years older than me. I grew up basically to a single mom. My dad wasn't around. He was in and out of prison and stuff like that. And I mean, it's a really long story as far as that goes. But
I'm dying. I finally I'm getting Pat back for all the episodes. Sorry, guys.
No, you're good. So grew up single mom, you know, older brother, 10 years older than me. And my mom had a cousin who he died. I'm trying to think of how old I was. I was probably 7 or 8 years old. And I just remember when he died, I started having all these questions about death, right? What happens when you die, stuff like that. And it got to a point where I didn't know this then, but I know it now. Like, it was creating all kinds of anxiety for me. Mm-hmm. And to the point where I didn't want to sleep because I was having nightmares about dying and what happened and stuff like that. And like I said, not growing up in church, not being in any of that, having a real solid foundation. My mom tried her best. So my mom was, you know, she got hooked on drugs and stuff when I was a kid. And so she was, she was doing the best that she could. And I remember she came to me one day and she was like, "Hey, I stopped by this church on the way home. And, the preacher, or the priest, I can't remember who she said, says that you go to heaven when you die." As though that was supposed to
relieve me,
anxiety, right? Yeah. My anxiety's gone. So that created more questions, right? And I was like, "Well, what does that mean? You know, if there's a heaven, is there something else? Like, is there another option? You know?" And so that's really, I guess, what kind of spurred on everything as far as thinking about the afterlife. Mm. And then my mom ends up getting married to my stepdad. And we moved out to East Texas. We moved out to Cedar Creek Lake. And we moved right next door to this little full gospel church.
Okay.
And
how old were you?
I was 12. Okay. I was 12 when we moved there.
It's a tough age.
Yeah. So me and my stepdad, we didn't really get along a whole lot, you know, at first. And it was pretty tough.
Mostly on your end or his end?
My end. Nah, he's great. Like, he was excellent, man. He was trying his best, you know, and I wasn't having it. Yeah. And so I was at school one day, and me and this dude named Kyle.
Did he punch drywall?
He might have. we ended up getting into it at school over his girlfriend, right? And we didn't really fight. We just kind of went back and forth with each other. Well, I'm outside my house one day playing basketball, and I look over, and guess who I see?
Kyle.
I see Kyle over at the church, and he's running around with a bunch of kids over there. And so, like I said, I ain't grow up in church. I ain't know anything. So I was like, "Man, I'm going to hop this fence right here. I'm going to go whoop his ass." Right? Like, that was my thought process. And so I jumped over the fence. Well, I could have just walked around, but I had to make it dramatic.
Yeah, you got to make the entry.
And so I jumped over the fence and go over there, confront him. And this old guy comes out, and he starts talking to me. He's like, "Hey, where are you from? Who's your family?" You know, I tell him who my stepdad is. And he was like, "Oh, Sammy Joe?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Oh, we went to college together." And he starts telling me all this stuff. And then he starts talking to me about the love of God, right? About loving one another and all this stuff. And I was like, "Bro, this is weird. Like, I'm out of here.
I'm just trying to get to heaven.
Like, I'm just trying to whoop somebody." Yeah. That's all I was trying to do, bro. Right? And so I was like, "I'm out of here, man." And so I left. And that conversation stuck with me. And, Kyle, his uncle, was the pastor over there. So me and Kyle ended up becoming real good friends, man. And I started going to church there. And I always say, like, that church introduced me to the concept of God in the Bible, even though, like, their theology was really shaky. You know what I'm saying? And
Pretty standard for East Texas churches.
Yeah, very, very shaky.
Shout out.
But but that's really, I guess, where my journey began, you know, is in that little church and just trying to grasp the concept of what does it mean to be a Christian, you mm-hmm. know. And kind of like what Travis talked about this morning is mm-hmm. the whole idea was, in my mind at that time, was I got to be better than what I am,
yeah.
you know. And my thought process was always comparing myself to who my biological dad is. I got to be better than him, you know. Mm-hmm. That was the standard.
Those father wounds.
Man, I'm telling you, bro. And
I'm going to shut up.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, I spent a lot of my life thinking, hey, man, I'm gonna do things different.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it the way my dad did it. It's like the older I got, and especially, you know, when he got sick and died, and ever since, it's like the smarter he was.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, I know that my relationship with my dad is my experience or whatever, and I don't think I'm terminally unique or anything in that, you know? Like, everybody's got an issue, you know? But it's just a weird thing to think about. Like some things I did do intentionally differently than my dad would have done them.
Yeah.
But then when I look back, I'm like, man, when my dad was 40, like, he was successful, you know?
Mm.
And, but, like, in what way? Right.
Right.
You know, it's like, how do you measure that? And so, I don't know, maybe I'm just in a weird spot, you know, but I'm just, like, looking around. I'm like, I've got a wife, she's happy. I've got kids, they're happy. I'm happy. You know, need to sell more cars.
Yeah.
You know what yeah. I mean? Like, yeah, I'm like, yeah. But before I've had those things and then had money and it was miserable. So right. It's like, I don't really know. I don't know. It's like I wanted to be different than dad, but like, as I got more perspective, I'm a lot like him and I'm happy about it. Yeah. You know what yeah. I mean? I don't know if that makes any sense.
I totally relate to that.
You know, also. It's like, because the perspective's different when you're 12 and you're getting whooped, you know, you're like, you know,
I hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway. But you had a relationship with your dad, right?
Yeah. Yes. But you didn't.
I didn't have one.
Just gone.
My biological dad. Yeah. So, I started a blog. I don't know if any of y'all have read it, but it's called Growing Up Bobby, mm-hmm. right? And so my family called me Bobby growing up.
Really?
Yeah. And so my mom was, she was like 13 years old when she met my biological dad. And I think he was in his 20s, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That checks out.
Yeah. And so it was it was a big deal, right? And so she has a lot of trauma from her mom and how they grew up and all this stuff, right? Like, we could really go really far back, you mm-hmm. know, and just get into the weeds or whatever. But my mom gave birth to my brother when she was 14 years old, mm-hmm. right? And so her and my dad, kind of on and off relationship, you know, stuff going on. And so they were all pretty much like a family, you know, my mom, my dad, and my brother. So about 10 years later, when my mom gets pregnant with me, you know, she knows that, if she has me, that my dad's probably not going to stick around again. And so she doesn't want that. Mm-hmm. And so, she decides to have an abortion. Right. And so she's working, she saves up her money. She calls the clinic, schedules an appointment, and my dad gets off work and he's driving home and the car breaks down on the way home to go pick her up to take her to the clinic.
Wow.
So he pushes the car home. He works on it all night. He drives it to work the next day. She reschedules for the following day. He's coming back home again to pick her up to take her to the clinic, and the engine throws a rod. Right. And so
yeah, like, fixing that overnight.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So the car is disabled. So she's like, hey, I got a choice. Right. And she's like, I can either walk to this clinic, which is just a few miles away, and use this money for an abortion, or we can go get another car. And she said in that moment, she was like, I knew God wanted you to be born. Wow. Right. And so I guess you could go back. You could go back then and say God was really.
That's when he really showed yeah, up.
That's when he really showed up at the beginning there. You know,
how old were you when you found that out?
Man, this was probably. It's within the past 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were grown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I always had this feeling growing up that something was different about my relationship with my mom. And there was a point where I was like, man, am I adopted? My mom hasn't told me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so the night we were at her house, you know, my wife was there, family was there. And she was like, I want to tell you this. She's like, I'm scared to tell you because I don't want you to think I didn't love you. You know, yeah. And so she tells me the story, and I just thinking, no, mom, like you were doing the best that you could with the situation that you had. You know what I'm saying? Like I never once thought you didn't love me.
Yeah,
you know, and so my life it's been a journey, man. You know, even before I was born. Right. So, and God has been present the entire time. So,
yeah. When did you start to like really reach out for him? Because you know, there's like for me, like I grew up in church, you know, I was in and out of it, but I still knew and God was involved in my life, but I wasn't reaching out for him and the things that I was busy doing what I wanted to do.
Yeah, there's always a catalyst, right? So God always brings you to this point where you're in desperation, right? And you need him. And for everybody, that's different. So I had met my wife in high school, and this is like really cheesy and corny, but it's true. When I saw her, I knew that we were going to get married.
Wait a minute. You and Shanna been together that long?
Yeah, we've been together. We dated for 5 years before we got married.
Wow.
So this October, I think, would be like 24 years that we've been together. So I saw her in high school, and I was like, you know, we're going to get married. Like that was my thought process. And so I was trying to figure out who she was. And what was crazy is looking back, her friends and my friends, like they all kind of ran together.
Yeah.
But I just never noticed her before, you know? Yeah. And it was just like one day I saw her and I was like, yeah, like who is this person? You know what I'm saying? And, so we, it's funny cause, one of the very first times that we talked was in the lunch line and, there in Maybank. And they were serving tater tot casserole.
Oh,
right. And so
that's back when it was good.
Yeah, too. Bro. So we're in line, and she was like, "Is this any good?" And I was like, "I enjoy it." And I grabbed two of them, and she was like, "Oh, I guess it must be good."
Yeah.
You know. And so even to this day, we have tater tot casserole at the house. You know, and tell the story to the kids or whatever. They get tired of hearing it. But so we, you know. Back then, AOL Instant Messenger was the thing, right?
Yeah.
And so I got her screen name. And so, like, we're chatting on the computer or whatever. And I was like, hey, you know, like, we should go out or whatever. Asked her out or whatever. And she was like, yeah, I'm cool with it, but you need to talk to my dad first. And I was like, oh, man, I don't know.
What? I don't know about all that.
It ain't that serious. No, it was. So I was like, all right. And so I started asking around about who her dad was and stuff. And everybody's like, you don't know who he is? And I'm like, no clue. And they're like, you should be afraid. Like everybody was like afraid of him, right? And so I see him one day at a football game and I go up and talk to him and I introduce myself. And I was like, hey, I'd really like to, you know, date your daughter or whatever, get to know your daughter. And he was super cool, man, you know. And so we talked for a little bit, and he was like, hey, I don't mind, but you need to talk to her mom as well, you know.
Dang.
And so I was thinking, man, I got the hard part out of the way, right? Because everybody's talked up her dad, right? But when I met her mom, like, bro, you know, it was different. And so her question was like, what do you plan to do with my daughter? And which is a valid question, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, ma'am, I just want to get to know her, you know, stuff like that. And I think I was a sophomore, she was a freshman, you know? And so there was a bit of an age difference there. Mm-hmm. And that's what her mom was concerned about, rightfully so. And so anyway, we started dating, and we, like I said, we had dated for a while. and everything was good, man. We were going to church together. Like, we were doing all the right things, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then we weren't. Then mm-hmm. we weren't doing the right things, you know what I'm saying? And so we, yeah, like, we started having sex, you know, and all mm-hmm. this stuff. And she grew up, like, super innocent, and I didn't, you know? And so one night she calls me, and she was like, hey, I think I'm pregnant. And, like, at this time, we're both, like, youth ministers in the church that we're in, the same church that was next door to my house, right? And so I was like, dude, there's, like, this can't be possible. Like,
it
it can't be, you know? And so I just remember thinking, like, man, the world's coming to an end. Like, life is over.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's going to find out we're fake. Everybody's going to find out, you know, all this stuff. And so I called a buddy that we had, who we had been going to Bible studies and stuff with him, and he had been kind of discipling us and stuff. And I called him and I said, hey, man, I really need to talk to you. And he was like, what's up? Like, he could tell it wasn't mm-hmm. good. And I said, mm-hmm. I need to come over. And he was like, yeah, man, come over. And it's late at night. So I'm sitting on his couch and I was like, hey, bro, Shannon thinks she's pregnant. And he was like, what are you doing? And I was like, that's a good question, bro. You know?
I don't know.
And so, man, he starts telling me, like, the gospel. Like, the whole gospel.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so, starting with, you know, creation, fall, redemption, restoration. Like, he just walks me through the gospel. Mm. And I remember looking at him and thinking, bro, I don't. Like, I had said, I had said the sinner's prayer 100 times.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I had been to the altar crying 100 times, yep. bro. But that night it was different. Yep. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And mm-hmm. so I told him, I said, bro, I don't think I'm saved, you know? And so I just remember weeping and just crying out to God. And I called Shanna on the way home and I said, hey, I think I really just got born again, like, for real,
mm.
you know? And so I'm telling her this story, and the next night she goes and talks to him and his wife, and then she calls me. She's like, hey, I think I just got born again too. Right? And so, like, it was wild, man. And but
Express Lane.
How old are y'all here? Y'all still in?
So we're man, that's a good question. I don't know. My wife is perfect with all that. I'm not sure.
We'll have to get her on.
Yeah, she definitely needs to be on. Trying to think how old are we there?
We're still in high school. Are we in college?
No, we've already graduated at this point. Yeah. So
So it's a big deal, but it's not like we're 12 years old. Big
right,
deal.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. And so so she said, you know, she felt like she got born again or whatever. And it turns out she wasn't pregnant. You know what I'm saying? Like that was just the catalyst that God used to bring us to that point to realize, like, we need salvation, like real salvation, you know? So we ended up getting baptized in Cedar Creek Lake, you know, by the guy that was discipling us. And just really started growing from there. Now, I'm not going to say things got perfect from there.
You know they never do.
But it got to where, like, it was like, hey, you either need to make this official and marry her, or you need to move on. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so she was pressuring me and stuff all the time. She was like, you know, we need to get married and all this stuff.
I'm a size 7.
And so what's crazy is we ended up going and buying the rings together and, you know, all this stuff. And we were just waiting for the right time. So I had it all set up, man. Father's Day, we went to Dallas. We went to Benihana. And I was gonna we were with her dad, you know what I'm saying, and her mom, and I was gonna propose right there in the restaurant, and
left Benihana's.
Dude, I left the ring in the car.
Oh no. Right?
Like, I screwed it up.
I was to say, wait.
I was like,
I'll be back.
I was like, so on the way back to her house, her parents rode in one car, we rode in another. On the way back to her house, dude, like, she's just letting me have it about getting married. You know, I'm like, she's just all over me. And so we pull up in her driveway. That day I'd already asked her dad and her mom, got their blessing and stuff. So I'm sure at the restaurant they're confused, like, you know, thought this was happening or whatever. And so we pull up in her driveway and I said, hey, you know, I got something to ask you. And I pulled the ring out and I was like, you know, will you marry me? And she was like, you need to get down on one knee. So I had to get out of the car and walk around, right, and do it the right way. And so I did it, and then we walked inside and told her parents and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that was the catalyst, man.
So what's that walk been like since y'all got married and everything? Because I know Shanna, she studied theology,
correct? Yeah, so she was in, taking some seminary classes in here over the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. But we both, man, it's a crazy story, bro. Like, it's super long. But so
we got an hour.
That's only going to scratch the surface.
That's fine.
So we ended up getting out of this little, like, God was just dealing with our hearts on the nature of God, right? Who he was. We started getting into street evangelism, so we would go out to Fort Worth, Sundance Square, and we would go pass out tracts and, you know, just have conversations with people on the street and stuff like that. And
is that like actual conversations with people, or is that like, you need to repent standing on the street?
Some of it was that, some of the guys we were with would do that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like, I was never that guy, you know, like, I enjoyed the conversations with people, you know? And so we got super heavy into, evangelism and repentance of sin and all this stuff. And the church that we were in, like I said, they just had some really bad theology, like it was more prosperity gospel, name it and claim it type stuff, And so, we ended up having these conversations with the pastor, and he slammed his fist on the desk, and he was like, "This is my church. I'm gonna preach how I want to." And
that's not your church.
Yeah. So we knew, like, hey, we can't be here. Yep. You know, we loved the kids that we were there with. Like, we loved all the people, but it was just the conflict in theology. And so we ended up bouncing around different churches, just trying to figure out where we needed to be. We ended up at one church that a buddy's dad had started, and it was basically a Baptist church, but I mean, they were they just wanted to know God. It reminds me a lot of Wilderness, back then. It was called Cornerstone. They met in a feed store, so they just wanted to know God, and they just wanted to love people and share the gospel with people, And so that's what we got into. And then, Buddy's dad got burned out, and this guy comes in, and he's got a vision for a church, and he's got all this stuff laid out. And we had this meeting, and we go over it, and I'm like, I remember telling Shannon, I was like, I don't think this is going to work. Yeah. Like, I just don't see this. This is just not a good idea to me, you know? Because I'm a real, like, forward-thinking guy, right? Like, in the short term, okay, it'll be successful. But long term, like, I just don't see this is how this church is supposed to be ran. And so that ended up turning into, like, a whole ordeal where basically it turned into a church split, after a few years. And I was real outspoken about some stuff that they were doing that wasn't right, And so they had a whole meeting, with me and a couple of other guys. And the guy that had taken over was sitting across from me, and he was like, "Hey, Robert, I got a question for you." And I was like, "All right." And he was like, "Do you love me?" And I was like, "Yeah, bro, you know I love you." Like, and he was like, "No, do you love me?" Right? And I'm sure y'all
sounds familiar. Sounds
super familiar, right? And I was like, "Yeah, man." And he was like, "So why are you, like, against me?" And, like, it was super just, like, manipulative leadership. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's one of those conversations of, okay, why are you spouting out all kinds of bullshit from the
pulpit? This might be a cult.
Yeah, exactly.
It was definitely going that direction, right?
That's, so, I can't tell you how many, like, ministries I've known of that have this, like, Messiah complex with the preacher.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I never really got sucked in with all that kind of stuff, because, the foundation that I had growing up, it's about Jesus. Now, they did not go much more into what that means to just loving Jesus and to being his disciple and everything. But I think there's a real pandemic for poor theology within the church.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, the bigger churches and more cleaned up churches, they really miss the point.
Yeah.
It really, like what we were talking about earlier, you know, that you can say all these things. Even Stephen in Acts, he was like, you know, you sing these songs, you pray these prayers, but your heart is not right. Yeah. You're as black on the inside as anything else that we see on the outside. So, yeah, I definitely can relate to that and what continued with that.
Yeah, so we ended up leaving that church, and I told them, I said, hey, in a year, this church will no longer exist. Ooh. And it wasn't. Ooh. Yeah, it was less than a year, they were gone.
And what's crazy is people within those circles of theology, they'll be like, well, Robert was a prophet. No, it's not even like that. Right. It's that you can see the writing on the wall.
Yep.
Like, you know that you've seen these patterns
that's
things.
A spiritual gift.
Prophecy that's is a discernment. Spiritual gift. Yeah.
Discernment. Yeah, for sure.
And the more that you actually just get practical and you start looking at the things, all the signs that this is the way this ministry is going down, then like you're gonna, and if you're one that just keeps your mouth shut, then you're probably not supposed to be. Yeah. Like speaking out about it because you don't know.
Yeah.
Like you're completely clueless.
Well, that's not me. I'm not a keep my mouth shut type of guy. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so we ended up leaving there. We started doing some home church stuff and we were just still kind of looking around. We ended up finding a church here in Tyler that we started driving from Maybank to Tyler to go to. And when we visited it, we fell in love with it. You know, and so for a year we were driving back and forth going to this church, and I was working there in Maybank. I was a police officer there in Maybank, and we were having kids, but the money wasn't growing, right? And so I told Shannon, I was like, I need to find another job. So Smith County came up somehow, you know, and so I started looking into it, and I ended up getting hired here. Well, at the same time, we felt like God was calling us to start a church, to plant a church. Mm-hmm. And so the church that we were going to here in Tyler was a church planting church. Like, that was their goal.
Yeah.
You know, they started a church, and their goal was to plant more churches. So we were like, this is perfect. We feel like God's calling us. This is what the church does. And so I went through a little... I don't remember exactly how long it was. It was a few months, kind of like pastoral training deal.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up completing that. I would preach there, you know, every now and again. And so going back to Cornerstone, when that church fell apart, we had gone through a series on Jonah.
Mm-hmm.
And I preached. I was the last one to preach. I had preached on Jonah 4. Which the book of Jonah is one of those that you think you know about it, right? And then you read it and you're like, this is nothing like what I was taught, exactly. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, Jonah was a big crybaby.
Yeah.
You know?
He's a racist, too.
Yeah, dude hated racist, hated other people, mm-hmm. right? If you weren't a Hebrew or Israelite, he didn't like you.
Yep.
And in the end, there's no resolution to his story.
Nothing.
You know?
And he's mentioned in one other place in 2 Kings, and it literally just says, the prophet Jonah, son of such and such.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Well, Jesus mentions him.
Well, I meant Jesus, the Old Testament.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, in the Old Testament. But there's no resolution to his story. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so, so I ended up preaching on Jonah there at Cornerstone. And then that's when everything kind of fell apart, right? Yeah. So when I was at this church here in Tyler, Shannon and I were out of town for a conference, a church planning conference, and I get a phone call, and they're like, hey, man, we need somebody to preach this Sunday. And we were in Memphis, right? And I was like, yeah, I can do it, bro. And they were like, whatever you want to preach on, preach on it. So I was like, well, I know Jonah like the back of my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I'll preach on Jonah. So I preached on Jonah. And after that, one of the elders took me to lunch, and he had a list of things that I did wrong.
Yeah.
You know, that was not right.
Like, y'all called me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, y'all called me.
And there, and a lot of this was very reminiscent of what I went through in Cornerstone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this little meetings that I had with the elders there. And so it started bringing up all these old memories and stuff, man. And that was the last time I ever preached, you know.
Really?
Was then, yeah. And I couldn't even tell you. I think that was 2014.
Wow.
And so the fire went out, man. I got really depressed. At the same time, my dad had just showed up out of the blue. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my dad's brothers sent me a message on Facebook, and he was like, "Hey, man, I found your dad in Houston. I brought him home to live with me. He really wants to meet you." And I'm like, "Man, I don't want to see him," you know. Yeah. And so they knew we were living in Maybank. And so he calls me one day, and he was like, "Hey, I'm here with your dad. Where can we meet you?" And so Shannon was like, "What do you want to do?" And I was like, I don't want to. So, but I was like, you know what? Maybe I should.
Yeah.
Just in case something happens to him, I don't want to have that regret. I had an opportunity, like, I need to take it. So I met with him, and you know, there wasn't anything special about that meeting. We were in Dairy Queen parking lot in Maybank. And he's like, "Hey, I'm your dad." And I was like, "Okay." You know, like,
good to meet you.
How am I supposed to feel here, right? And so I remember asking him, like, "Why'd you leave? Why weren't you around?" Yeah. You know, and he was like, he gave me some kind of BS answer, man. It was, you know, if I had stuck around, I would have ruined you, or, you know, something like that kind of deal. And so all I ever wanted from him was to say, "Hey, bro, like, I'm sorry," or "my bad," or, you know what I'm saying? Something like that. And
not "I was protecting you."
Yeah. And so I didn't get that. And so we talked for maybe 30, 40 minutes. And when we moved to Tyler, 2014, all this stuff had happened with the church. I had just met my dad for the first time. We were going into Father's Day. And, dude, I just went into, like, a really bad depression. I was, like, 32 years old, right? I just went into a really bad depression. And Shannon didn't know how to deal with it. And I didn't know what was going on. You know, I didn't know how to talk to anybody about it. And so I started having conversations with, you know, one of the dispatchers at work. And so that ended up leading into an affair, mm-hmm. you know, that was going on. And by God's grace, I got caught. Shanna caught me, mm-hmm. you know. And so that turned into a whole ordeal. Like, what's going to happen here? You know, we've got all these kids. We just moved here to Tyler. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like life's falling apart. Here we are, another catalyst that God is using, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want anything to do with God. Like, I didn't want anything to do with church at this point. Like, I was done, man, you know, because we had gone through, you know, the first church there in Cedar Creek Lake. And here we are in Cornerstone, and everything falls apart. Here I am at this church in Tyler, and it's very reminiscent of what I went through in Cornerstone, you know, and I'm just like, dude, I'm done.
You know
what I'm saying? Like, if these are God's people, if this is how God operates,
I don't want nothing to do with it,
man. And so she caught me. She left. I went to work. I came back home. There was a note there. She was like, "Hey, I took the kids and left. I'm not telling you where we're at." And so I was like, "All right, cool. If that's the game that we're going to play, then hey, I can play it too." So I grabbed all my stuff and I left, and I ended up moving in, you know, with the affair partner. And it was 4 or 5 months of hell, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, restless, just constantly. Like, I don't dream often when I sleep, but I was having nightmares, you know, just all this stuff, man. And it all came to, during that time, you know, me and Shannon would communicate very little. I would see my kids very little. But when we did communicate, she would always tell me that man, she would always tell me that she loves me, and that everything that we were going through, she would always say, you're worth it, right? That's what she would tell me. She was like, you're worth it. And here's what I wanted from her, to leave me alone, right? I wanted her to be done with me, because then I could say, well, look what you did.
Look what she did.
Yeah, you gave up on me. You know, and she wouldn't do that, bro. She was persistent. Loved me in spite of everything that I was going on, everything that I was doing, what was going on, and how much I was hurting her and my kids, you know. And it was Thanksgiving of 2015. A bunch of stuff had happened at work, and I ended up leaving work early. And I'm at this house with an affair partner. I have no business being there, right? I've got a wife and kids just across town. That's where I belong. Mm-hmm. And everything just kind of was just coming to a head. And that night, you know, I didn't see anybody for Thanksgiving. I didn't see any of my family. I was missing my kids. And every time I closed my eyes, I just pictured my kids being disappointed. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking of how much of a failure I was. And like I said, my standard always in life was to be better than my dad, right? Mm-hmm. And in this moment, I was no better than him, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I'm not going to put my kids through that. Like, I'm just not going to do that. And so I pulled out my phone, and I wrote a letter to Shanna, and I wrote a letter to each of my kids, you know, and I had it on my phone, and I had a gun in my lap, and put headphones on, and to this day, I still can't really listen to the song, but I turned on Adele, Hello, and it was just on repeat as loud as it could go, and I'm just working up the courage to shoot myself, to kill myself, you know, and I ended up falling asleep. I cried myself to sleep, so I woke up the next morning, the gun's there. The music's still playing, and I remember I said out loud, Robert, what the hell are you doing, bro? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I text Shannon, and I was like, hey, I don't know what this is going to look like. I don't know what we need to do, but I want to come back home. And so she was like, okay, but you're going to do it my way. And I was like, I wouldn't expect anything else. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like,
I've already made a muck of this.
Yeah. Whole thing. I screwed everything up, bro. And so, she had a list of things that I needed to do, and, I did them. We went to counseling, and, I was real hesitant about counseling because she had already been going, and I was like, you know, I'm going to get in counseling.
Y'all just going to gang up on me.
Yeah, exactly. It was a female counselor, you know, an older lady. And I was like, y'all just going to tell me how big of a piece of crap I am, you know? And I was like, I don't need that, you know? And so we got in there, and it was none of that. Like, she was equally hard on me as she was on Shanna, you know? And just, we did a personality deal, and she was like, no wonder y'all have problems. She was like, Shanna, you're the hardest person in the world to live with, you know? And just like, let her have it, man, you know? And then she was like, but that doesn't give you an excuse to be the way that you are, you know?
You're still choosing to live with her.
You know? And so it was really good, man. So we did that for about a year, maybe a little over a year. We went to this thing called a emergency marriage seminar, which was real. It was a weekend of just super intense, basically therapy, I guess, you know? And, it was there that I finally revealed everything to Shanna, because the affair wasn't the first time that I'd ever stepped outside of my marriage. You know, but I let her know of every instance, you know, that had ever gone on, and just laid everything out. And I was like, this is who I've been, you know, and these are the people, the women, you know, and she knew some of them. Some of them were friends, you know what I'm saying? And so it was really, really tough, man, you know, to just to lay yourself bare and in front of your wife. And, of course, she was hurt, you know what I'm saying, and devastated, but very forgiving, you know. And God just worked in our lives through that, you know. And to this day, I mean, there's still some some consequences of that, you know, like, especially with my oldest daughter, you know, it was tough on her, me not being home, mm-hmm. you know, and so we're still dealing with some of that. She has a little resentment towards me, you know, for some of that.
How long altogether were y'all separate?
It was about five, I'm going to say about 5 or 6 months, you okay. know. Mm-hmm. So, but Joanna was old enough to realize, you know, that yeah. something wasn't right.
Yeah, something was off.
You know. And so when I was finally able to tell her the story, when she was mature enough to understand it, I mean, she was devastated. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That I would do that. And, man, God redeems the broken, right? Mm-hmm. And so he did. We ended up, we stayed at that church, you know, that I was hurt. We ended up staying there. And, God used that church to grow our family, you know, to just grow us. And you talked about theology, like that was a big thing for us. You know what I'm saying? Is solid theology and mm-hmm. having the right perspective and outlook on God, you know, yeah. who does the Bible say about, mm-hmm. about God? Is. Yeah. About who he is, you know, and that's where we were at. And so, we really started getting into, wanted a church that reflected the community, you know, as a whole. And so we started looking into like multicultural, multi-ethnic churches and stuff like that. And one started up in North Tyler. And so we started going there. Well, right about this time is it's when the Ferguson shooting happened, mm. you know. And so there was a bunch of people who were obviously anti-police, you know, and it was just a us versus them cool. type of thing. So I'm trying to navigate like, all right, I'm a Christian, I'm a cop, right? And I'm in this church, this multi-ethnic church, and there's some people there who... like I'm seeing on Facebook that they're just bashing police, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm like, you know, how much of this do I overlook or, you know, stuff like that. And it finally got to a point where I reached out to one particular family that was saying all these things. And I was like, hey, when we're at church Sunday, tell my kids how big of a piece of crap you think their dad is.
Yeah.
You know, because like it was really getting annoying. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and make so, sure you mention that.
Yeah, yeah. Tell them you don't feel safe around me, mm-hmm. right? Tell them you think I'm just out here killing yeah. everybody. Like, please say that in front of my kids. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no, that's not what we meant. Well, that's what you're
putting out.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what you're saying all the time, you know? And so then COVID happened, and of course we stopped, you know, going to church in person. And it was really, I guess, about 3 years after that, man, 3 years after COVID, that we finally started going back to church, mm-hmm. you know. It was just so easy to not go. Well, during that time, I'd gotten in trouble at work again, and I said again. I say again because it involves another female, mm-hmm. right? And so I got caught having an inappropriate conversation. I was a supervisor. She was a subordinate, and got caught, ended up having an inappropriate conversation, and I got suspended from work. Mm-hmm. And so my supervisor had to drive me home, and he was like, hey, you know, you don't have to tell your wife what happened, right? Because if she asks us, we can't tell her anything. And I was like, no, I need to go be honest. And, you know, so I walked in the door and she was like, what are you doing home? And I said, well, I got something to tell you, you know. And said, I haven't cheated, but I was having inappropriate conversations, right? You know, it wasn't nothing physical. And so, of course, she's hurt all over again, devastated. And she was like, well, you need to call my parents and you need to tell them what's going on. And I'm just like, man, I don't want to do that, you know. And so I sat down and had a conversation with my father-in-law, and he was super gracious, super kind. Like that, I love that family of death, yeah. man. You know what I'm saying? And they, I think they love me. No, they love me. But that was super hard, man. And so Baron Wedgeworth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he had worked for me. I was his supervisor for a little while. And he knew what had gone on. And he called me one day and he was like, "Hey, man, just want to check on you." And I was like, "Man, I'm all right." And he was like, "No, really, how are you?" And I was like, "Well, you know, I'm going through it, bro." And he was like, "How's your marriage? You know, how are you and Shanna doing?" And I was like, "Man, I guess we're all right. Like, we're struggling through it. You know, like, this is all my fault or whatever." And he was like, "Yeah, you're an idiot, bro." You know, and like, he just
sounds just like Baron.
Yeah, he's letting me have it, bro. And he was like, "Hey, man," he's like, "we got this thing going on at church."
Yeah.
And he was like, "Are you interested?" And I was like, "I'm really not interested in church at all." And he was like, "Well, it's not really like that, you know." He's like, "I can't tell you about it."
Yeah.
You know, he was like, "But," he's like, "I really think it'd be good for you to go."
Yeah.
And so I was like, "Well, let me think about it." And so I talked to Shanna. I knew the name of the church was Wilderness. And for whatever reason, I just assumed we were going to be camping.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm like, "Bro,
I'm camping with the boys."
I was like, "Bro, I'll be out there fishing. Like, I don't have to talk to nobody about God. I'll be out there fishing, bro.
I'll be clearing my
head." Yeah. So I was taking sleeping bag, fishing poles. And so I told him, I said, "Yeah, I'll go, bro. Like, I'll go." Right. So I pull up to the church and I see everybody lined up by the stairs. And I'm looking at everybody and I was like, "Bro, none of these people look like anybody that I would hang out with.
Nobody's going fishing.
Yeah, and I'm like, "Where are the fishing poles?" Right? And I was like, "What are we?" And I was like, "Hey, bro, are we staying here?" And he was like, "Yeah, you're staying at the church." And I was like, "Ah, man.
There's no like, Lakers.
Yeah, here. Like, I wanted to leave, bro." I was like, "I want to go fishing. Like, I don't want to talk to y'all." Yeah. And so I don't know how much I can say about
keep it to a
freedom weekend.
Keep it to what you can't tell your homies. If you can't tell your homies, you can't tell.
But, you know, I go up the steps and we go in and we do the first trust deal.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, dude, what the heck did I just get into, bro? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, this is another cult.
Yeah.
Type crap going on here, bro. And
it does kind of feel like that.
It does feel like the music that was playing, right? Mm-hmm. And all this stuff. And this dude, he's like, "Do you trust me?" And I was like, "Bro, I don't even know who you are."
Exactly.
"No, I don't trust you."
Yeah.
You know? And so we go through the whole thing. And, you know, that first part where it's just as a broken man, you know? And I'm sitting there watching everybody do this, and I was just like, "Bro, this is so stupid."
Yeah.
You know, like, "This is dumb. I want to leave."
The mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, I'm not doing this, you know? And so I'm watching everybody get up and say all these things, and I was like, "Bro, that's not even that bad." You know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
grow a pair, bro.
Yeah. And so I'm just like, I said, talking to myself, inner dialogue, I was like, "Either be a part or leave.
Yeah.
Don't waste everybody's time."
Yep.
Right. And so I knew if I took that first step that God would meet me. And I knew that. And I didn't want him to.
Yep.
Yeah, that's where I was at.
That's, you know, the thing. That's the thing.
That's the inconvenient truth of the deal. The problem is that it works.
Yeah.
That God's real. And
I knew he would. And I didn't want him to. You know,
it seems like people will accept any religion out there except for Christianity, because Christianity is the only one that your sin is an inconvenience to your relationship with God.
Right.
And whenever you actually are essentially pouring yourself out, and you're trying to get to know the God of the universe, he always shows up.
Yeah.
But it's how much you're willing to to put into it.
Yeah, so I go in front of the mirror, and, you know, I've heard all these people say these things. And like I said, I'm thinking, "Bro, that's not that bad."
Yeah. Really? Get over yourself.
You know? And so I just start saying, like, you know, as a broken man, I cheat on my wife. You know? Mm-hmm. You know, I have cheated on my wife. And just start pouring all this stuff out, and I can just feel everybody looking at me, bro. You know, and so we go through the whole weekend, and I can't tell you how many guys were just like, you know, "I could have got down there and said that too, but I was afraid to," you know. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, man, that's why, I think that's why they put that there, mm-hmm. you know, so that we could be that vulnerable, you know? And, so Freedom Weekend, like, really changed my life, man. It really opened my eyes to a lot of things. And just this group of guys, like I said, looking at them, I was like, bro, I'd never hang out with y'all intentionally. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And after that, you know, I go home that Saturday and I tell Shanna everything about it. And
she's like, what, were you speaking in tongues or something?
No. We had done that before. Yeah, right? We'd already been in that church. Yeah. And so I just tell her, like, this is not the church that I would pick for us to go to, but I think we need to be going here, yeah. you know? And so we went one Sunday. We took all the kids. And this is, one of the first times we've been in church since COVID, you know? Mm-hmm. And we leave and she's like, you know, I really enjoyed that a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, like there was no expectations of us, you know, because almost every church we've gone to, people are like, oh, y'all could be good leaders, you know, like
immediately.
Yeah. You know, and like there was,
that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Like we just wanted to go to church and just be a part of church. Like we didn't want to do anything, you know? And, so the kids are in the car and, before I could even ask them about it, the kids are like, hey, are we coming back here next week? And I was like, why? And they were like, we love this place, you know? And my kids have never said that about church. Really? Like, they've always enjoyed going, but they've never been that excited to about go church. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next week. And they were ready to go back, man. Yeah. And so being at Wilderness and all this stuff has, you know, it's just really been life-changing for us, man. And you know, Shannon's been able to step into a role. This is what I've been the most proud of, is that she's been able to step into a role that she's wanted to be in, mm-hmm. you know, as whereas in our past churches, like I was that person,
right.
You know, like everything Shannon's doing now is what I was doing in our other churches. And so, just being able to see her grow and God using her gifts, you know, for those ladies and for herself in the church, has ministered to me, you mm-hmm. know, just on the side, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And so I'm watching her go through these studies and we're talking about the things that she's learning. And, you know, our home, we have 3-4 bookshelves that are just full of all the theology books that I had, you know, when I was wanting to start a church. And so all these books, like, we're blowing the dust off of them, you know, mm-hmm. getting back into these things. And so just seeing the growth, you know, in our family, you know, Joanna just got baptized, mm-hmm. you know, just a few months ago and stuff. And we had, you know, hella trouble with her, mm-hmm. you know. We ended up having to kick her out of the house for a few months.
Oh, wow.
You know,
really?
Just because... you know, she was rebelling, you know, and stuff like that. And it got to a point where it put my kids in danger, you know. And so I told her, I was like, you got to go, you know. And I was like, I don't know where you're going, but you got to go. And that was one of the hardest things I ever had to do.
Yeah.
You know, and but God used that, you know, we reconciled and we ended up telling her she could move back in. But these are our rules. These right? are
conditions.
Yeah. And so she was, you know, had all the humility in the world and she accepted it. And throughout the process, you know, she was like, I really think I need to, she wanted to go to Cal Camp, is that what mm-hmm. they call it? Yeah, she wanted to go to Cal Camp. And so that was hard for us to do, you know, mm-hmm. to just let our kids wander off to Oklahoma without our supervision.
Did she go?
Yeah, she went, man.
She went this past summer? Love
it? Yeah. She loved it, bro. Yeah. She loved it. And came back super excited, telling us all the stuff that she learned. And
it's such a unique experience.
I don't think it's like anything I've ever been.
Oh, really?
Of digging, you know what I mean? Cow shit out from under your fingernails and going and learning about the Word of God at night. Yeah. There's something very unique.
So she went and Elijah went. Right? Yeah. And Elijah's 13. They had two different experiences.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. So Joanna, like, really connected with God and her relationship with God got really deeper, you know, from her experience. And so she comes back. She's like, hey, I want to be baptized. And, you know, she wanted to tell her friends about Jesus and stuff like that. And Elijah comes back and he's like cussing.
You know what I'm saying?
And he was like,
I learned some new words from them cowboys up there.
He didn't learn new words, but he was like, well, they were cussing, you know?
Yeah.
And so we're like, bro, you got to stop doing that.
Yeah, you got to chill out. Yeah.
But
I think I cussed out a couple of them kids last time that I went. Not this past year, but the year before.
For sure, at about 3 o'clock in the morning when I still couldn't get to sleep.
Yeah.
In that preteen camp.
Hey, my
kids. And these kids were talking about, you're gay, and then like pulled a mattress off of a bunk and drug it all the way around and like threw it on this other kid. I was like, effing stop. I was like, y'all are kids. I'll get probation.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is going to stop. Yeah. I'm sure Travis was like, ugh.
Yeah, my kids will bring it out of you for sure. Yeah. So.
They always seem super polite when I see them, but I guess y'all are always standing around in the lobby with them. Right.
Well, that's first of all, thank you for being so vulnerable.
Yeah, man.
That's we've had some guests on the show that will know a little bit of backstory, and like I didn't know backstory to you, and you just drop that. I'm like, whoa.
I don't even have a question to ask. I'm like,
that's barely scratching the surface, dude.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what they used to call reader digest version.
Yeah. I mean, that's like what Michelle said about hers. You know, she's like, I left so much out.
Yeah.
But I think you did a really good job of getting the overarching story out there.
Yes.
You know? And like, my hope is if somebody listens to this and they can like reach out to you.
I'm
struggling with the same stuff, you know, because I've said this before, I think on the podcast, but you know, there's a story about a guy that's walking down the sidewalk and he falls in a hole and then, you know, he can't climb out. It's too deep. And a preacher comes by and prays and throws him a Bible. And a, you know, policeman comes by and he's like, what are you doing in this hole? And he's like, I fell in the hole. I'm stuck. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. And the fire truck comes, the ladder's not long enough. And finally, this guy walks in and goes, hey, man, how long you been down here? He's like, been down here a long time. And the guy just jumps down in there with him.
Yeah.
And he freaks out. He's like, now we're both stuck, dude. Nobody can help me. And he's like, follow me. I know the way out. I've been in this hole before, you know. And then, like, the wraparound on that is, like, don't fall in the hole again. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. I've learned a lot. Like you, I learned a lot of lessons over and over.
Yeah.
And, you know, the second and third and fourth time that you learn it, it's just demoralizing.
Yeah.
You know, because then it's easier to go, how did I do this?
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And I think to me, the takeaway is like, hey, I'm not a bad person. You know, I think Christianity gets this weird deal. Like I'm a Christian. Y'all are bad. I'm good.
Yeah.
That's not it. We live in a fallen world, and I'm sick. You know, I'm hurt. I have problems for sure.
Need a physician,
and that's it. That's it. And God's there to go, hey man, let's get you out of this hole.
Yeah,
you know, even though He knows I'm gonna get back in that hole.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know that I'm any better than a pig. You know, you wash them off, and they'll get right back in the mud. But, you know,
yeah, that's the beauty of grace, right, is that, man, it's undeserving, you know, and that's what my wife modeled over and over and over again, especially the time that, you know, those 5-6 months that I wasn't at home. I didn't deserve her loving me, you know what I'm saying? And had she said, hey, I'm filing for a divorce, we're done, you know, that's what I deserved, you know.
Because that would have been justified.
Yeah, 100% justified. She would have been well within her right to do that, you know. She would have protected herself, our kids, you know. And nobody could have blamed her for that. But she didn't, you know. And so her constantly saying, hey, you're worth it, was the gospel. Because that's what Jesus says to us, right? Like, you're worth the enduring the cross. You know what I'm saying? You're worth the agony. And all that stuff to give us grace, you know, to bring us to repentance, you know. Mm-hmm. And like Travis said, we were dead, not dead. In need of resuscitation,
yep.
you know, but in need of resurrection, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that's what,
yeah.
to us, that's that big God theology, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Is that if it was up to me, and the Bible talks about this, right? That there's nobody good, no, not one, mm-hmm. right? Nobody seeks to do good. If it was up to me, I would never come to God.
Yep.
Ever.
Yeah.
You know, but God used all these little things in my life to just make these deposits to say, to draw me in. Mm-hmm. You know, the Holy Spirit has constantly been drawing me in since I was a kid before I even realized it.
Yeah.
You know? And all these little catalysts going through all these hard things, you know. So that's why when we were having issues with Joanna, you know, Shannon was having a really hard time. She's like, where did we mess up? And I was like, I don't think we did.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure we got some stuff wrong here.
That's
there.
The thing is we're in a fallen world.
Yeah.
And darkness has realized that its time is limited.
Yeah.
And that's why it's going after our kids because yeah. they are so
in vulnerable. Our marriages. I mean, like, look, anytime two people come together in front of God and make that commitment and get married, and then they say they're going to raise their kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, they dedicate their kids to Christ.
Yeah.
And then they go to church and they serve in the church and they're a part of the church and they help other people. They're honest about what they're doing. You know, the devil's like, shit, you know what I mean?
Take them out.
I'm telling you, you know, mm-hmm. look, you know, Michelle got saved on Easter and I promise you, like, we've been getting attacked.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
are we expecting it, you know?
I mean, I didn't expect it to get easy.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And so maybe somebody needs to hear that, you yeah. know? I mean, because the stories that we keep bringing out on this podcast, I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, you know, if you met the people at church or you saw them at their work, you wouldn't know,
right?
Like, I don't know if one of your family members just got in a car wreck or... I mean, I deal with this all day, right? Like, I'm in sales. It's, like, almost as bad as being a cop, right? People are like, hey, I don't need any help, you know?
Except then, you can't arrest nobody.
Well, no, I'm like, hey, somebody helping y'all? Oh, we're just looking. Okay, cool. And then, like, 5 minutes later, it's like, hey, is anybody going to help me?
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. It's the same thing with the police. Right. It's like, oh, there's the cops, you know? And yeah. then it's like, I get in a wreck or somebody steals my
Where's
car.
Where's the cops
Where's
at?
Where's the police, you know?
Right, right.
And I think we treat God like that sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah. You know,
every situation that we're in, we're like,
if we think it's going good, we don't need God. And if yeah. we think it's going bad,
then where are you at, God?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
it's
where
like,
were you when I made all these dumb decisions?
One right. of the things that sticks out from 9/11 was so many people on 9/11 were saying, like, where was God in all this? Where, you know, what was going on there? But
he was letting the CIA do the free will thing.
Exactly. Like, the CIA was hard at work. And another country in the Middle East that we did not come in and bomb the shit out of was at the bottom of it. But, you know, whatever. Like, that's the thing is God is always right there. We just have to reach out to him.
Yeah.
And we have to get out of our boneheaded decisions. We have to get away from ourselves because, like, the things that Pat wants to do is not the things that God wants him to do.
Well, I think even this is the gospel is that even if, when I can't get out of my own way,
mm-hmm.
right, Jesus still comes for me.
Yeah.
You know, if you go look at the Apostle Paul, right,
mm-hmm.
he's in the middle of persecuting mm-hmm. Christians, killing them.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's watching Stephen get stoned,
yeah.
and he's approving of it. And as he's on his journey, right, Jesus shows up.
Yeah.
You know, and Jesus tells him, why are you persecuting me?
Yeah.
You know, and then he's like, one of the Gospels, he says, it's hard for you to kick against the goads, right? Mm-hmm. And if you go back and you look at what that is, those are the things that they used on the livestock to mm-hmm. get them to turn.
Yeah. You the know. Yokes and everything.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that.
The
yeah.
yokes and the goads, right? To get them to go where they wanted to go. And so Jesus is telling Paul, you can't resist me.
Yeah.
You can't.
And on top of that, you realize Paul could have, whenever he switched sides, he could have went to persecuting the Jews the same way that he did the Christians.
Yeah.
Like, he could have literally taken his whole ministry in Judaism and said, okay, I'm going to take everything that I know from that and I'm going to apply it to saving the Christians and, you know, starting a whole new crusades. But what did Jesus do? What did the Holy Spirit do? He changed his heart.
Yeah.
And that's something that is so unique about Christianity, is that, you know, it's convenient for me to want to do the things of my own heart and say God wills it.
Yeah.
But the reality is whenever I change my heart and get into a position where I'm looking for the things that God would want, because I know his nature.
Right.
Right? You can't separate God from his own nature.
Right.
And the more that we pursue him, the more that we look for him to show up, or see, or even just see the ways that he does show up, that's when our hearts change.
Yeah.
And that's something that is very unique to Christianity, and something that people are so flabbergasted about, because, you know, people can ask me like, oh, do you love racists? And I'm like, yeah, I love racists. I hate racism.
Yeah.
But, and I hate the acts of racism, but them as a person and in the image of God, I love them. So therefore, I can't do what I want to do to a racist, yeah, and go beat the hell out of somebody because of they've burned a cross in somebody's yard, whatever. I have to love that person.
Yeah.
And I have to share the gospel with them, and also live out the gospel if I get close enough to him, type thing.
So one of my buddies, he does Young Life, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And they were at Legacy, and mm-hmm, Joanna was going to Legacy for a little bit, and we kept telling her, hey, why don't you get involved in Young Life? And she was like, well, everybody that's in Young Life is racist. Like, they're all constantly making jokes about, you know, black people and stuff, mm-hmm, like this. And she was like, I don't want to be a part of that. You know, so I went to my buddy and I was like, hey, you know, Joanna says she doesn't want to be a part of Young Life because you got kids in there that are racist. And he was like, yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. And he was like, that's who we want. We want them there, mm-hmm, you know, so that they can hear the gospel. Yeah, these are the people that Jesus came for, mm-hmm, you know. And just that little truth was just like, duh, like, that makes sense. You, mm-hmm, know what I'm saying? And so I went back and told her, but she didn't want anything to do with it. And so, like I said, we were having our issues then at that time
too. You got to pick your battles.
Yeah, yeah, she didn't want anything to do with church either. Yeah. You know, and I was like, man, I've been there, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like that is the goodness of the gospel. You, mm-hmm, know what I'm saying? Is that God comes and meets us where we're at, you, mm-hmm, know. And it doesn't make life easier, you know. Things don't magically get better, mm-hmm, for you. Like, we have a saying in our house, Garcia's Law, right? So something bad's gonna happen, but it's gonna happen to the worst degree that it can happen. You know, like, it's not just gonna be like, hey, we got a normal water leak, right? It's gonna be like every pipe flowing, in the house is busted. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is our life, man. You know, and so we're used to it. Like, something happens and we're just like, Garcia's Law.
Yep.
You know? And I've got a thing, so I say this all the time, and it used to annoy Shanna all the time, but you know, she'd be like, oh, hey, you know, this is going on, and she would be frustrated about something, and I'd be like, oh, light momentary afflictions. You know what I'm saying?
Light momentary, yeah. What is that, Corinthians?
I can't remember where it was from. It might be Corinthians, yeah. But I was like, those are light momentary afflictions. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm tired of you saying it. You know? And
they seem pretty big right now.
Yeah. But even now, we're just like, hey, light momentary afflictions. You know what I'm saying?
I heard that like three times.
What was it like when you found out y'all were going to have another baby, man? That's the question. This one. Yeah. This one. This is the one that, like, my wife's like, I think Shanna's pregnant. I'm like,
what?
I'm like, no, she's not. No, there's no way. Yeah. Like, I, for sure, there's no way. And she's like, no, I really think so. And then we found out that she was.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. Yeah, that's so a were lot we. Of kids, dude.
Yeah, so were we. So when we first got married, I remember we had a conversation, like, you know, I was like, man, I want 2 kids, right?
That's a good number.
Yeah, good number, right? That's what everybody wants.
Blew kids. That one out of the park, buddy.
Boy, girl, right? And we had wandered off into some Bill Gothard. You might have heard of Bill Gothard. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's go look it up. It's very, I almost feel like, I don't know. Anyway.
I'm going to look him up.
Yeah, right, so now, Bill Gothard was very cultish, okay, right? And it was, so 20 Kids and Counting, y'all seen that show, right?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, so they were very Bill Gothard. Like, okay, the women don't work, they stay at home, the men work, the women wear skirts, you know. It's very legalistic, mm-hmm, you know, all kinds of legalism. So we wandered off in that, and Shannon was like, well, I think God will decide how many kids that we have. You know, and so how do you argue against that, right? And so it wasn't that we had a set number either way, how many we're gonna have or, you know, not gonna have or whatever, but we had, you know, we had Joanna, Micah, Elijah, Joshua, and then Miriam was born in the midst of all the affair stuff going on, right? So she was her name is Miriam Rose, right? Mm-hmm. And she was my rose, like she was my saving grace, you know. And I really connected with her after she was born, and we just have this this awesome relationship. Not that I don't have those with my other kids, but mm-hmm, the one that me and her have is really special. And she's my little shadow. Everything that I do, she wants to do. The mm-hmm other kids won't care about anything, and she'll be right there,
yeah,
you know, trying to figure it out and all this stuff, and just wanting to be a part of everything. And so after Miriam, Shannon got pregnant again. And she ended up having a miscarriage, right? Mm-hmm. And I just knew in my mind, in my heart, is that, you know, we can't end having kids on a miscarriage, yeah, you know? And so it's not that we were trying for another one, but if it happened, it happened, mm-hmm, right? And so Reuben ended up being born, you know? And the connection that Shannon had with Reuben was kind of like the one that I had with Miriam, mm-hmm, you know? And so we thought we were done. And man, for 6 years, you know, like we were good. We were doing everything, natural family planning, all this stuff, because I ain't gonna lie, I'm scared to have a vasectomy, man. Like, I don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, for 6 years, we, like I said, everything was going good. And then all of a sudden, I just had a feeling. Every time that we've been pregnant, I've known, mm-hmm, you know, beforehand. And, I just had a feeling, and Shannon had a feeling. And so I remember I was sitting on the couch in our living room, hanging out with the kids, and I hear her from the bedroom. She's just like, Robert. And as soon as I heard it, I was like,
you whip.
Confirmation.
Right?
And so I walked in the bedroom, and she's holding the pregnancy test, and she's shaking. Right. And she was like, I'm pregnant. And she was like, this can't be, you know? And and so it was really tough, man, you know, because we're older, you know. Yeah. And we just started thinking about 18 years from now,
yeah,
you know, what that's gonna look like. And we were content, you know. Yeah. We were content with six kids, you yeah know. And
then that seventh heaven.
Yeah. And God's like, no, you're not content, you need another one.
Were you gonna be 58?
Yeah. Yeah, 58, 59, somewhere.
See,
somewhere around there. But
whenever I was 18, my dad was 60.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he had me, and well, and
there
I
you
had
go
a
yeah
yeah. This here we go. Gonna be like, what you're going to be dealing with? Because like my dad had two daughters and a son and a stepson that, like, not exactly a stepson that he folded in, but another kid that he folded in, yeah, type thing. And my sister met me at her graduation, and she was 18 years old.
Wow.
And it's kind of crazy because, like, she had kids after I was born, and, like, now my nephews are, like, my best friends. Yeah. Like they're a few years younger than me.
That's awesome.
And so I've got like my siblings, and then I've got my nieces and nephews, which we're all pretty close together also. So it's a really unique experience.
Yeah.
You know.
So is having seven kids.
Oh, I bet.
So David's been a blessing, man. You know.
That's his name is David?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. David Robert.
I can't believe how much he's grown. I was telling y'all this morning, like, he's supposed to be, like, 2 days old. Yeah, like, y'all are just bringing him home.
So what's crazy is that is, you know, Shanna, when she got pregnant with Joanna, we were living in Maybank at the time. And so Joanna and Micah were both born in Athens hospital.
Yeah.
And so with Joanna, Shanna wanted the epidural. And so she got it. And then halfway through, she was like, I don't like this feeling. Turn it off or take it out or whatever they do, right? And so after that, everything was natural birth, you know. So Joanna and Michael were both born in Athens Hospital. Then Elijah and Joshua were born at... midwife.
Okay.
Right. And then Miriam and Reuben were both home birth.
Okay.
You know.
So it's like a scale.
Yeah. So we kept getting.
Well, I mean, y'all are getting good at it.
Progressively more natural.
Exactly. You know like, saying? You know, so, you go through a couple of them, you start to figure it out, you know.
And so with David, because, you know, Shanna's older and there was such a big gap, you know, all the other kids are. Two and a half years apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this and David and Reuben are 6 years apart. And so Shannon was like, you know, she's like, I think I need to have this one at the hospital. Mm-hmm. And so it was December. It was December 22nd. Before that, Shannon was having some high blood pressure issues, right? And so her blood pressure was getting super high, you know, and on the 22nd of December, it got super high that we ended up calling 911. And so the ambulance came and they showed up and they were super rude, right? And,
really?
And you're a first responder too.
Yeah. And they were like, so the doctor told y'all to call the ambulance, you know, if this was going on, because they can't really treat her, right? Yeah.
They can just get you there.
Yeah, and that's what we wanted. Like, hey, just get her there. Just want her to be safe on the way there, you know, whatever. And so we get to the hospital, and they start checking her blood pressure and stuff, and they were like, hey, you got preeclampsia, right, which is pretty dangerous for both mom and the baby. And the only way to treat preeclampsia is to have a baby, right? And so that is not what Shanna wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so at one point, man, her blood pressure was like, 200 over something, like it was high.
Golly.
And I walked out of the room and I grabbed the nurse and I was like, hey, are you seeing this? And he was like, holy, you know. And he, so he comes in there and so we ended up having David on the 23rd.
When was he due?
Of December. He was due, he was a month early.
Yeah.
You know. And so when he was born, he was 6 pounds. I think maybe 9 ounces,
that's 6 pounds,
something like that. Yeah. Right. And, but a lot of that was because of the fluids that they were putting in Shanna, the IVs and stuff like that. So had it not been for that, he probably would have been 4 or 5 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, he'd have been really little and, which he was already super little. And so, birth went great. You know, we ended up getting moved to a room and her blood pressure was still high. They were still treating it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point, so when she got to the 200 over whatever the bottom number was really high too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like 150 or something. Like, it was crazy, man.
Yeah.
And they had to give her some medicine to bring it down really fast, right? And so we ended up getting moved to a room. And she's still dealing with this high blood pressure stuff. Well, I'm holding David, and they gave her some medicine. And within just a matter of minutes, I start watching my wife die.
Yeah.
You know, because they had given her the wrong medicine.
And shut up.
Yeah. And so her blood, like, dude, her blood pressure's dropping. Oh. And she's lost vision. She can't see anything. She was like, I could hear y'all talking, but I couldn't. She couldn't communicate. She couldn't talk back, you know.
Yeah.
And she was trying. And so I'm holding this baby, watching my wife dying. And I'm just thinking, God, I can't raise these kids by myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, and
that's the reality of any of that situation right there. Like, everybody's thinking it.
And I'm
just
thinking, like, it's like I can't make it. I can't do it. I can't do it without her.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I was, and I just remember praying, like, God, I need my wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I need her. And so I grabbed her and just started praying for her. The nurses panicking. So when the nurse starts panicking, I'm just like, yeah, this is not a good situation, bro. You know? And so, they come in, they start giving her some medicine. And, I just remember Shanna opening her eyes and she said, okay, I'm back. Right. And, later on we talked and I said, where'd you go? And she was like, well, you know, when they say you're dying, you see the light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. She was like, that's what it looked like.
Really?
Yeah. She was like, it was literally like just bright light. She's like, I could hear y'all talking. I could hear everything that y'all were saying.
Yeah.
I just couldn't, I couldn't do anything,
huh.
You know? And so, they brought her back and, you know, I think if we wanted to sue the hospital, we probably could, you know, and get papers.
I'm pretty sure y'all are still in the statute of limitations.
Yeah, but we're not those people. We've had opportunities to sue before and we haven't.
Do it.
Just kidding. But I just wanted my wife back, you know, and I got her. And so, like I said, Garcia's law, something bad's going to happen. It's going to go. It's going to be really bad, bro. Case. You know, and, you know, so we made it through that. And, once we got home, you know, we're thinking, okay, everything's good. She gets a call from her doctor, says, hey, it looks like you're in a renal kidney failure, right? And so we're just like, dude, what the heck, you know, like, what is going on? And so it was still part of the preeclampsia, right?
Okay.
And so we were trying to get to a
stable
kidney specialist.
Oh, okay.
Nephrologist.
Yeah. And this is like February,
mm-hmm.
when we get this information.
Oh, wow.
And they're like, we can't see her till July. So we were like, okay, well, what are we doing, bro, in the meantime,
that's,
bro?
That's,
you know,
freaking typical.
And so we go to the nephrologist in July and they're like, no, everything's good. Like, you're good, you know? And so it was just like really stressful, man. And so the first few visits, well visits that we had with David, like, he's super small. He's not gaining weight, you know. He's looking really frail. And we were kind of concerned. And then all of a sudden, dude, he just takes off.
Just, you know,
like, he just shoots up. And now he's eating everything. And he just, mm-hmm. he's blown up, you know. And so, yeah, he has gotten really big really fast. So, thankful for that. Super healthy. Super intelligent, man. But it's been a blessing, you know. It's not easy, you know, but I feel like that's been our lives, is that God has just called us to hard stuff,
right?
You know,
and he's prepared y'all for it.
Yeah, for sure. So,
wow, dude, I had no idea about that either. Like, that's crazy. And I'm not gonna ask that question. I was gonna ask what hospital was he born in, but never mind.
Hey, man, they did a really good job, given the circumstances.
Bringing it back together.
Yeah, and the doctor jumped their tail, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So I was just, like I said, I was just happy that my wife was back, man, because I was watching her fade out, you know, and just thinking, man, that I can't do it, you know.
Definitely.
It's kind of like that song, Don't Take the Girl.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Tim McGraw the other day.
Dang, bro. That came on at work the other day. I started tearing up.
I did, I was too.
Like, I got to walk outside.
Same thing. Holy cow. Yeah, well,
that was me.
Well, that's all of it is amazing. And to see God really coming through in the way that he needs to.
And there's a lot of redemption
in your story, man. Yeah, he's still redeeming us too, bro. So.
And y'all are willing to discuss it and, you know, have the difficult conversations. Yeah. And I want to affirm you again, mm-hmm. like, just for coming and laying that all out, because, like, that's some heavy stuff to look at the mirror again, you know?
Yeah.
That's
especially a mirror that can be replayed, you know? If you're listening to this podcast and you're wondering what it feels like to sit in that seat, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It is super crazy.
Yeah.
So, also, if you're scared of it, let us know. We'll bring you on, you know? It's kind of like having a baby without an epidural, you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
I wouldn't know.
Think about that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't know. Kidney stones.
Yeah, I have too. Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see where God is going to take y'all, how he's going to use mm-hmm. you, how he's going to continue to use Shanna in the ministry, because, you know, I don't see Shanna's firsthand ministry, but I hear the women talking about it and how they're getting deeper into the word and learning more about the word. And it doesn't seem to be founded on emotion. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's something that I really appreciate out of any ministry, because as soon as you start playing on emotions, and it's a form of manipulation.
Yeah. We've been through all that, man.
So yeah. Y'all seem really grounded and knowing who God is. So definitely appreciate you.
We're
guys.
Trying, man. We're still learning.
Oh yeah. We all are.
So
yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's been another episode of Two Dudes, One God Pod. We'll see y'all next week.
You bet.
Thank you.
Wow.
Every time he asks that, I literally.